Hello, hello, and welcome back to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Swetman, and today on the show, we're talking about the newest film from Steven Spielberg, The Fablemans. Filmmaker Texas Smith returns to help us break that one down. And we've got a preview of a local film event. Arkansas filmmaker David C. Cruz is here to tell us about his feature Yego Hoy, which is playing March 9th at the Ron Robinson Theater in Little Rock. Stick around. Welcome to Art House Garage. We're going to talk all about The Fablemans in just a few minutes, but before we do, we've got a local film and local filmmaker to highlight. David C. Cruz is an Arkansas filmmaker I've had the pleasure of meeting at some local festivals over the last few years. I've also very much enjoyed his short films, Unos Huevos, and the interestingly titled Pigs Stand Tall But Can't Dunk. So I was very excited when I heard he was working on a feature. It's called Yego Hoy, and there's a screening event happening this Thursday, March 9th, at the Cal's Ron Robinson Theater. The Arkansas Cinema Society is hosting the event in addition to the film screening and a filmmaker Q&A, and there will be booths set up in the lobby before the film featuring some local Latino-owned businesses. So it's going to be a great time. ACS really knows how to throw a party, so I am looking forward to it. Tickets are available at the ACS website, and that link is in the show notes. David sat down with me for a few minutes over Zoom the other day to answer my questions about Yego Hoy and the event. Here is my conversation with David C. Cruz. I am joined today by David C. Cruz, director of the film Yego Hoy. Thank you so much for being here today, and I'm excited to talk to you.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I've heard about this film, I mean, for a while now. So I'm excited that it's here and that people can see it. But before we talk about kind of how you made it, just tell us about what is the film and what kind of inspired it.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it brief. It's mostly about a mother who's kind of awaiting a return of her son, who she's trying to smuggle back. And when the day finally comes, a complete stranger shows up. So she's just kind of confused and trying to put the pieces together. Mm-hmm. And she's trying to take care of this one guy who she's trying to slowly build a relationship with. And she slowly starts to forget about her son. But also it's still there. So it's just kind of like this drama that continues to unfold. And then some other little things in there that I want to save for next week.
Yeah, yeah. Some surprises for sure in the film. What inspired you to make this story? What was there anything in particular that inspired the plot?
Yeah, I kind of had like a chip on my shoulder when I was like starting to write it, because I was seeing certain media or TV shows or movies that are out now that just I feel like weren't properly reflected, or it was just kind of like super one-dimensional stories of, you know, things that we get typecasted in, or you know, the typical stereotypes that I feel like we're used to seeing, like the sort of cartel influence on media, and I was like kind of studying that for a little bit. I was just curious about it, and like immigration. So I just kind of wanted to build a movie on sort of these tropes,
yeah,
and see what I can do and just kind of embed parts of my life into it and see what could come of it. That's kind of how I started. Not necessarily saying that everything worked out, you know. I was just kind of testing things out as I went along.
Yeah, and it's a very human story, I think people are going to see when they watch it at the screening. But yeah, again, I feel like you've been working on this for quite a while. I think I remember, you know, Instagram page has been up for, I want to say more than a year, right? Tell us about the process of making this and kind of where you filmed everything.
So yeah, it was originally going to be like my thesis for UCA. But I quickly realized I just wanted to make just like a feature so I could have something under my belt. So I started it like a year before my senior year. And then we started production I think November of 2020, COVID kind of halted some of the shoot for a little bit, but like through weekends, through like an 8 month sort of course, we shot, we had like 20 production days. So wow. It was on and off. It wasn't continuous. And yeah, I think May 2021, we finished, we wrapped. No, actually we had, I think in June, I don't remember. It's been so long, but like after that, I had to do a bunch of pre-production stuff, like, because of the stop motion animation element that are in the film, that took me a really long time. Cause I had to manually just do every one.
I was going to ask if you did that yourself or if you hired
someone. No, we had an artist, by the name of Cole McVane. He did it. My producer Luis got a hold of him, and I'm so happy he's a part of this. He drew all of them. He just showed up to the office with like these fat binders.
Nice.
And he's like, "Here you go, David." And then he would just drive off. And then I would just grab the pages. And I've never done this before. I would just film it with my 6K camera.
Wow.
I'd throw it in the edit, and I'd spend so long. It took so long, and then I had to color it and like add every little. I mean, I still don't think they're done. Because, you know, but
I mean, it looks great in the film. Those sequences are really stunning, I think, when it pops into the stop motion thing. So I really like it. Did you make it film everything here in Central Arkansas?
Yeah, like 80% of it was shot in Little Rock. Okay. Parts of Little Rock and Alexander, Arkansas. And then I took a trip to Mexico, and that I had the opportunity to just go ahead and get that part over with, because I thought that was just going to be, it's like, I'm just not going to be able to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. But I brought my camera out to Mexico and shot all those sequences.
Wow. Yeah, I felt like I was in Arkansas for most of it. It's never like exactly certain, but I was like, I think I saw 501 on a billboard. But it feels familiar for an Arkansas viewer for sure. You have some really strong actors in this film. Tell us how you found your performers.
Yeah, so the performers are my parents.
Oh, really? Okay.
I didn't realize that. My mom and dad. And actually everybody in the movie except probably Emilio.
Mm-hmm.
Not Emilio. Emilio, which is like one of the UCA actors, Rudy.
Oh, okay.
Rudy Fajardo. He did theater. So it was pretty easy to kind of talk to him about his character little more, and he could kind of build off of it. He had a little more, you know, he was a little more trained, but when it came to my parents, my mom had a music background, so she's just used to being on stage, and she would just rehearse. And my dad, it was a lot tougher, because I had all these like, you can't do like the two-page monologue scene, you know. So
sure,
he's not gonna remember that, or he's not gonna try to. He's like, I'm gonna do my thing. So at a certain point, I had to just work around him and just make a bunch of script changes.
Well, I think it turned out great. I did not know those your parents. They both give great performances. I think your mom especially, just they're both very kind of naturalistic feeling. And yeah, I was really impressed by really all the acting in this, but those two especially. Well, I'm so excited that it's coming. So tell us about the screening. When is it? How can people get tickets?
And yeah.
Any last thoughts?
Yeah, so the screening is next Thursday, March 9th. Doors open at 6:15. And the show starts at 7 p.m. There's going to be at the lobby, there's going to be some booths of the movie, just kind of memorabilia, some like some hats, some posters. And then there'll be like some booths with some vintage clothing. And then somebody else who's just did he's kind of like a print advertising. And then just kind of maybe another booth where it's just like creative stuff, things that some of my peers, you know, things they've done over the past couple of years.
That's great.
Yeah, and then it should be fun. Then after that, we'll have a Q&A after the movie. So
great. Well, that is, that's next Thursday. It's at Cal's Ron Robinson Theater. And I am really excited to get out there for the screening. And I hope a lot of listeners are able to make it as well. Thanks so much for coming on the show to tell us about your film. And thanks for sharing the film with me. I really did enjoy it. And I'm glad that it's going to have such a nice screening next week. It's great.
Cool. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
A Huge thanks to David for filling us in on the film. I hope you'll consider coming to the screening. You can support local film and have a great time doing it. Check the show notes for the link to get tickets. And now let's move on to Spielberg. Steven Spielberg's latest film is also his most personal. The Fabelmans hit theaters late last year, and now it's nominated for 7 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Director, and Best Lead Actress for Michelle Williams. Spielberg turns the camera on his own life story, or a version of it. The film follows a stand-in character named Sam Fabelman through childhood and adolescence, with a particular focus on his connection to the movies. Sam's relationships with his parents are unique and at times quite emotionally fraught. Michelle Williams plays his mother Mitzi and Paul Dano his father Bert. Sam is played by Gabriel LaBelle. In addition to the tension between art and family, the film explores themes of creativity versus science and the thrill of innovation. Here to dig into this film with us today is filmmaker Texas Smith. The week The Fabelmans came out, they posted on Instagram a huge outpouring of love for this movie, so I knew I wanted to get them on the podcast. Texas is a director and actor, in addition to helping run Prairie Creek Productions, a company that has put out a number of wonderful films since founding in 2019. I will link to the Prairie Creek website so you can check it all out for yourself. And just before we talk about The Fabelmans, Texas also fills us in on a recent film project they worked on called Chronicle of a Summer Day. All right, now here first is the trailer for The Fabelmans, followed by my discussion with Texas Smith.
Movies are dreams. That you never forget. Sammy?
To change how everything looks, it's hard to find our house.
Ours is the dark house with no lights.
In this family, it's the scientists versus the artists. Sammy's on my team, takes after me.
What kind of movie are we gonna make?
Texas Smith, welcome back to the podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me back. It's been a minute, but yeah, I'm a fan and lots of fun filmmakers always coming on here. So I'm always excited to come by and say hi.
Yes. And I mean, you recommended people recently, had Ling Tran on the show, and that was so great. And yeah, so I'm always happy to have you or anyone that you recommend on the podcast. I appreciate that so much. But yeah, it's been a while. I was trying to think, what was the last thing we talked about on here? Probably First Cow. I think it was First Cow.
Was that I know we didn't talk about First Cow, but did we talk about anything else before that? Back in August. Oh, Green Knight.
We did the Green Knight also.
A little a patch, and I remember that small talk. But yeah, I'm excited to dig into The Fabelmans today.
Yeah, me too. I saw that you were a pretty big fan of it, and definitely got a lot of things to talk about. So I'm excited to hear. I mean, that's my MO lately is like find the person that's like the biggest fan of this movie and let them just go crazy. So
I think that's been a big thing with me over the last couple of years, especially with so much great film and being out there. I've just really tried to let go of my pretense when I'm watching stuff and I just really get excited as we've been able to get back into the theaters. And I don't know. I don't know if it's, if it was a Pope, like a after lock-in kind of sort of things, but I don't know. I'm just seeing a lot of great things, but Fabelmans is up there with me. And I don't like to rank things for the most part, but it was definitely in my top 10 of my unranked films of 2022.
Great. Well, before we talk about Fabelmans, I want to hear about your latest film project you told me a little bit about, and it's called Chronicle of a Summer Day. And one of the interesting things about this is it doesn't have a director. So tell us about the film, how it came together, and what does it look like to work on a directorless film?
Yeah. So this is a fun community project that I was really lucky to be a part of up here in
I say up here. All right, now I'm actually I'm back in Arkansas, but for the most part, I kind of bounce between Chicago and Arkansas, working on films. And some of my colleagues up in Chicago, one of them is a really talented florist, John Caleb Pendleton, who is the creative director of Planks and Pistols, which is a floral design and a sculpture, essentially. He's a true visual artist in all forms of it. I got really lucky in the sense that he had a last minute opening to have a visual artist help him depict his 2021 Juneteenth installation. Mm. And so I kind of helped take point for the actual production. He had over, I'm trying to think of it exactly because it's been a couple of years now, but we had 5 different filmmakers there the day of, but with 8 to 9 different cameras throughout the week. And so the whole thing really became about like, how can we literally and metaphorically cover this event and the impact on the community through as many lenses as possible. So what that led to was a lot of footage that took a long time for our very talented Kira Helm, for them to dig through and carve out something coherent with. And I mean, like you mentioned, it was a directorless project. So there was a lot of discourse throughout the whole time. And also that added some post-production time as well, but I think it was all worth it. I'm very excited with where we're at with it. And I shared with you via DMs that we're about to actually have our world premiere in Athens, Ohio in just a couple of weeks. So yeah.
That's amazing. I was going to ask that. That's great that it's coming out. And I was going to say too, I agree that it was worth the extra time because it really is beautiful. And it's fascinating to see the different camera styles. To hear like there were multiple filmmakers on there on the day. And the editing is at times frenetic, at times really gentle and beautiful. The music is great. There's this poetry involved with it. Really, really wonderful. And I think like a really meaningful kind of Juneteenth film as well. So I hope that it finds an audience. And do you think it'll go to festivals and things too after the world premiere?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Yeah, we're going to, the Athens, Ohio is actually the 50-year-old festival, the Athens Video and Film Festival, that's known for, so it's Academy qualifying and all these things. So hopefully this will be the first of many. And then we'll go from there, see what happens. We're really with the whole intent of it too is to give back to the community. So hopefully do a couple community screenings up in Chicago and other places as well.
And that's great. It really is a lovely film, and I'm so glad that you shared it with me, and I can't wait for more people to see it.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
Well, let's move on to The Fablemans. So this is, of course, the latest film from Steven Spielberg, prolific, you know, one of the greats. And it's interesting kind of going into a Spielberg film, you know, what exactly do you expect? Because he's done so many things over the years. This is sort of a movie about movies, which is interesting. We haven't had just a ton of that from him, I guess. And there's a lot of movies about movies out there. Some, I think, more successful than others. Does this one work for you on that level? And why not?
Yeah, no, I think absolutely. What's funny is I feel like, especially for filmmakers of like the last 20, 30 years, it's so often that you do your personal film first, so audiences get to know you, and then you can do genre stuff or blockbuster stuff, etc. Yeah. But it's really funny, or I think kind of Spielberg's now reverse engineered this. He's been in everybody's lives for like 60 years or so. And now we get his personal, we finally get his his artistic and creative story, the artist's journey. I can't help but feel more grateful for having all of the context and all of kind of the baggage I came into it with. And I think so many audiences come into it with. When you talk about it being about movie making, yes, it's like very practically about like, how he became a director in his process. But I think it's also about how like the history of Hollywood for the last 50-odd years have been really been developed, and kind of going back to the Rosetta Stone of how of this one filmmaker who had such an impact over all of the stories that so many of us have ingested. Even if you don't love blockbusters or Hollywood films, like this man is at the forefront of the visual language for the entire world. And it's amazing to see him get so personal.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I was thinking about it because it really worked for me as well. But it's not, overly kind of saccharine about yay cinema kind of thing, which is what you see a lot of the time. I feel like recently I watched Babylon, which I didn't connect with as much, but I thought it was interesting. And there's a lot of, you know, film history stuff in that, or like Empire of Light recently, very much, you know, we're going to close up on the person in the theater and their life has changed. And like, that's really sweet and wonderful. But this, I think, is a bit of a different angle into it, where it's less yay movies. And it's more like, what does cinema mean to this one particular character? Like the good and the bad of how it affected him growing up. And I love that it's almost a character study of himself. And you really, I guess, when there's those moments that cinema is very involved in his life story, you really feel more because you're experiencing it through Sam's lens in this film. So yeah, I really like this this way of making a movie about filmmaking. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, I think you're right on the nugget of it all, is that all of the reverence that he has to filmmaking, it's through the character, through the lens of Sammy. It's all Sammy's kind of, basically, it's how that character copes with everything. It's how it's his worldview. Which I find very relatable, and I know a lot of people who find relatable. And so it's not necessarily yay movies for the sake of movies. It's truly just how this boy can grapple with everything around him and the relationships that he has with his parents, and the complex relationships he has with everyone around him. And I mean, arguably towards the end, you can see that it's less yay movies and it's more like, he's vexed by it, you know. It's kind of like a burden he's gonna have to live with the rest of his life. And we also get that during the monologue from that amazing yeah. monologue. It's yay movies, but it's yay movies at an extreme cost.
Yeah, and especially like with the end, I think you're maybe referencing like the high school film scene and like the responsibility that it is to have that gift, and like what the way that affects people. And that's a really interesting aspect of it as well. But I was going to ask about, you know, as a filmmaker yourself, especially the kind of art and family stuff, you know, his uncle comes, as you mentioned, there's this great scene where he's like, art, family, they'll tear you apart. And really one of the scenes of the year, I think. But does that conversation ring true for you? Did you feel a personal kind of connection with that kind of line of reasoning?
I mean, I'd be lying if I said no.
Not to ask too personal of a question.
I don't want to psychoanalyze too much. Or I don't want to make you my analyst or the audience my analyst. But you know, absolutely. I think a film I thought was less effective this last year, but still a great picture. That kind of talked about the same thing, was obviously Banshees of Inisherin. And I think both this and that just do a great job of, like, you know, we have one life, and thusly we are finite with what we can do within that amount of time. So if you want to write the great Irish song, or if you want to make a great movie, well, you can't do something else because it takes a lot of effort to do that. The other weird thing it reminds me of is I actually over the last couple of months watched the Nick Saban Bill Belichick HBO documentary.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it, but yeah.
But you know, it's SEC football and all. So the season I was over, I just needed something. And so, but yeah, it was a very similar thing where those great coaches, their personal lives aren't very rosy, but it's because it's the work. And at some point, you know, when you're so focused on one specific thing, it costs something. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's important to prioritize the humanity, because I don't think you can make great art without humanity. And you can't coach a great football team without good humans.
That's true too. Yeah.
But you know, where you invest your energy, I think that's a really humbling thing that I've definitely been thinking about over the last couple of years. I think we've all been really having to consider who we are investing in, what we're investing in. Yeah, I mean, how did that resonate with you?
Yeah, I
mean, that's like,
I'm gonna talk about this without trying to psychoanalyze myself too much. But first, another film that I thought about along those lines is Bergman Island, the Mia Hansen love film last year. There's a lot about, like, it's such like a Bergman nerd out. You know, they're in his home and they're going to the museum, and like, it's fun as as a viewer to like get to do that without traveling to that island. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, they hear, you know, he was not a great husband. He was not a great mm-hmm. father. But he made, you know, such prolific film, and like one of the titans again. So yeah, it's an interesting way to even think about Spielberg and Bergman and kind of their own relationships with family and art and everything. But we're gonna say something.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say, yeah, it's interesting that you bring up Bergman, because that was, honestly, he popped in my mind a couple of times during the second viewing, just because Spielberg's always been fascinating with where he places the camera and been exceptional at blocking. And I feel like Bergman's great about that too. Just like putting the camera in one location and then all the action plays out. And at every moment, the compositions are beautiful. And I mean, throughout all of Spielberg's films, but this one specifically, just the way he's able to sit the camera down and just like let you observe this family dynamic. I think that's another great way he grounds the drama, grounds, you know, and keeps it a realistic human story, opposed to it becoming again all about the medium, even though there's so much about the medium, so many letterist qualities to this film that you can geek out about. It's not just about that.
Yeah, and you're saying that, I'm thinking about like this, the dinner scenes in E.T., where there's just like the family at the table, or even in Jaws with like the... So I saw Jaws way too late. I'd seen it as a kid like a long time ago, but then in the last like 2 years, when finally just sat down and watched it, and I was so taken aback by like the father daughter scene at the table in the middle of the film. Like, this is so beautiful. But anyway, yeah, just seeing that is a through line too, with the way he shoots the intimate family scenes. But, thinking about the art versus family stuff, and it's a little bit related to kind of art and science, because that's another thing that his mother says, you know, in our family it's the artist versus the scientist, and Sammy's one of us. And I really had quite a personal reaction to it. I've seen it twice. I watched it in the middle of like end of the year cramming stuff, and I was like, oh, this is pretty good. And then I watched it again this week, and I was like, oh, this is incredible. How did I wish I had you know, been able to emotionally engage more the first time. But that scene with his uncle actually like brought some stuff up. Like, I gotta go journal about this. And thinking about, like, so I'm a parent, and I have a wife and kids, and I think every parent feels to some degree the struggle of, you know, there's a lot of things I could do if I had more free time, basically. And I especially like early lockdown, I really had to process a lot of those kind of feelings, just feeling so jealous of like single friends, or at various times feeling like jealous of friends who have gone into creative paths where I didn't exactly. Obviously, I do this podcast now. It's a great creative outlet. I love it.
It's a great podcast.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. And also, I don't have any regrets. I want to say that too. Like, absolutely love the family life that I live. I love being a dad, all of that. But there is sometimes a wistfulness for, you know, what might have been. As I was watching that scene, I suddenly remembered a few like specific, like had flashbacks of times when I had done something creative that I was really proud of, and it was met with some criticism in a way that I feel like kind of maybe stifled the creative drive a little bit. And again, I don't want to get too personal, or like, it's not woe is me kind of feeling, but this film brought that up, and I was like, wow, that really is a universal feeling. I think even if, you know, like myself, you're not a filmmaker and didn't go down a path like that. I thought that was really interesting, and it hit me the second time around. I thought it was great.
I think the film does a great job of not only giving a really sobering look at like the creative process, like from like what it cost, but I think it does a really great depiction of like what it is to create something. And we've kind of been talking more about the family stuff, but going more towards the process stuff, there's that one sequence when right after they shoot the Western, and he's watching back the dailies essentially.
Yeah.
And you just see Sammy look at it, and I just watched it, so it's fresh in my mind, but he just like looks at it, he says fake. And just like the level of self-disdain and the performance, and I don't know, I felt very seen whenever you're watching the first cut or something, or reading back a first draft of an article, or I'm sure listening back to audio sometimes, you just like, I can't, this is horrible. Why would I ever make any of these choices? And it's very easy to spiral from there. But I think what's beautiful is that Sammy continues, and that's like, that's the whole thing about art, is it's you have to start, And then what's the art is the finishing it and sharing it. It's not all sexy in the production, or it's mm-hmm. not sexy the entire time. It's hardly ever sexy. What it is it's showing up. It's clocking in and it's not giving up.
Mm-hmm. I love that scene as well. And so many of just the moments of him, you know, things like I've heard, you know, he thought of this great way to, as a teenager, how to throw dust in the air to make it look like a bomb, and like seeing those kind of special effects that he innovated on the fly is really cool to experience those different things. Even as a young kid, you know, putting ketchup in his sister's mouth at the dentist scene they're making and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. That stuff is really fun. Are there any other like things as a filmmaker that you really enjoyed watching in this
film? Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I grew up, my family never had Super 8 cameras or 16 millimeter cameras. And we had one DV camera that we played around with, and I made very silly like little things with friends occasionally that are buried or lost to the sands of times. And so, you know, it's very exciting and it's romantic to see like back when like Super 8 cameras were used by families like this, and like were just like readily available and like the tools were available. And I mean, to share a little bit about my process over like the last couple of years, I've been getting more into analog processing with Super 8 film and a little bit of 16, doing hand processing, doing some analog editing and stuff like that, and kind of just doing experiments to see like what that does for an audience in the hopes and bringing that over to my more narrative work in the next coming projects I have coming up. But this was just really inspiring, and you know, it allowed me to just feel nostalgic for how things were, but also it also is exciting because like this film, with all of its multimedia collage of the different formats and the way it was, you know, post-produced, like this could not have existed, you know, back in the time of purely analog processes. I feel like a big triumph of the culmination of all filmmaking processes over the last 120 so years. You mentioned Babylon earlier, and obviously that's like an ode and a celebration of filmmaking in all of its forms and things like that. And in a way it's kind of yelling at you to celebrate those things. And what I really love about The Fablemans is it's more like a, let's talk through these and like, let's use these for narrative and for story and for theme. Mm-hmm. But in the text, you get all that. You get all the formats, you get a play of expressionism. Like there's the whole sequence with the mother getting the call from her dead mother. It like totally leaves the realm of reality for a second. Mm-hmm. It becomes very Tony Kushner, but it doesn't break the movie. It's just a fascinating collage of so many things without ever breaking into or fracturing what it's trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love seeing, you know, where he's got the film taped and like labeled on his desk in little strips and all that. And then when the editing machine is such a big deal to get. And I think it's so interesting too, kind of like the good and the bad of cinema and the scene where he, I don't know if we want to be, we can maybe avoid the spoiler, but when he discovers something during the editing process about his family and how that all plays out, I think is really well done. And he creates almost like this snuff film, essentially like this really potent, like thing that he's hiding. And that I think just on a filmmaking level, the performance of Michelle Williams is fantastic in that scene where she watches that film. Yeah. And then later when she's kind of processing with Sammy on the roadside, they kind of stop on the side of the road. I think that those two moments are my favorite probably performance moments in the whole film, both from her. But yeah, do you have any other thoughts about whatever you were about to say, but then just like the filmmaking in general?
I think you're Michelle Williams is winning, as she always is. She's one of the best we got in acting, and but I think all like it's I mean, as Spielberg does, he makes his actors so comfortable, and you just get such a level of effortless play from basically everyone. I love Seth Rogen in this movie.
Because
he's just like, I don't know, it like I feel like we often get to see him over the top comedic and stuff like that, but what's great about this character is he's like kind of funny, And he's like, he's not a, but he's not too much, you know?
He's the fun uncle, you can see him as the guy
yeah. next door or the uncle character. Yeah. He's not going to be down at the improv doing the 15 minutes. And I love the way that they found that balance of that tone. But even though I'm forgetting who the actor, the name who plays teenage Sammy. But
yeah, I'll look it up really quick because I'm forgetting it else.
So. I want to say Gabe Vincent, but that's the basketball player from Miami. It's Gabriel something, I believe.
It is Gabriel LaBelle.
Gabriel LaBelle, yes. Yeah, no, and I believe this is one of his first performances. And and this goes back to stunning. His way to navigate around and just kind of because it's a tough role and it's a tough character because so much of it is observation. That's like the role of the director is to observe so many things often. And so even though he's the protagonist and at points at the lead of the film, he's asked just to witness things.
Yeah.
And that's incredibly hard, but the entire time he's listening, the entire time he's watching, he remains charismatic and fun to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much about his, you know, his eyes and what he's seeing. And like about the moment in the hospital where his grandmother's kind of at the end of her life. Mm-hmm. And there's like a moment close up that he notices before anyone else mm-hmm. that it's like the end is nigh kind of for her. I think it's a really interesting scene. Yeah. Just the director's eyes in his everyday life. Yeah.
Exactly.
You mentioned, you know, making actors comfortable and all of that. And also, Paul Dano's fantastic in this too. And I think mm-hmm. it's not a showy performance really at all, mm-hmm. but so understated and really touching. The second time around, also I noticed like in the ending scene where they're in like in his apartment, there's a moment where he sees a photo and like just the, mm-hmm. he gets a really emotional beat in that scene that he doesn't get a ton of during the movie, I think, but that's mm-hmm. really, really well done. But I also love the scene again, like where the movie's about movies later, where we see Sammy coaching an actor in the World War One film, I think it is. That scene is so wonderful. And I was so shocked the first time because I didn't know how that was going to play out. And he's trying to elicit an emotional reaction for the screen. And he essentially like teaches this guy to be an actor and like take this emotion and feel it and show it. And he's overwhelmed and he starts, you know, breaking down. Mm-hmm. And that's another moment the second time that I really felt the emotions of the film. But I thought that was a really wonderful touch as well. So I think that's one of the Spielberg things that he's great working with actors. And so we see that, you know, right there in the text.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. No, that's, I mean, especially, you know, there are so many ways this medium can go, you know, like and there's so many different kinds of films you can make, but like going back to this idea of Spielberg kind of, you know, developing what we consider the modern day blockbuster. If you have any sense of like, if any disposition to like have a fondness for that, this is such a fascinating masterclass and basically every single level from the performances, from the direction, from the cinematography, which we want to talk a little bit about, but like Yanush's like color palette and those layers throughout the film. Like it's just it's such a rich looking movie that teeters often to this like kind of surreal expressionistic kind of painterly kind of world. But again, is like it for me, it's like it's a way of like elevating everything and making the emotions and the reality of it feel more vivid, opposed to approaching it like with a Verte style or something that's like more documentary-esque.
Yeah.
That I feel like is more trendy, at least in the current
setting. Absolutely. Yeah.
The current day.
Yeah, I remember seeing when the trailer first came out, some reactions on Twitter, people saying, well, this looks kind of like cheesy or something. And then some reactions to those tweets saying, nobody does cheesy better than Spielberg. Like he's going to be, you know, over the top and kind of create this world where you can really feel wonder and everything else. Like I think he really, somehow he creates those worlds. I think about the movie Hook a lot. I think sure, I was listening to some people like, you know, listing their favorite Spielbergs and like they didn't care for Hook. But Hook is like one of my favorite movies because I was a kid when it came out and I have so much nostalgia with it. But it's one of my first movies that I remember like really like crying watching when I was like in like fifth or sixth grade or something. Yeah. But I love the movie Hook and I think it's similarly, you can feel like almost like a fantasy world in the Fablemans, this created thing, even though it's very grounded. And that has to do with the color palette and the cinematography, like you're talking about, I think, because a lot of it's very vivid and bright. I really love this movie. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about that you connected with the Fablemans?
No, I mean, I feel like we should shout out Rufio after all of that.
Yes, absolutely.
But no, I just absolutely, I loved this film. I feel like it was underseen at the Blockbuster because, you know, mm-hmm. it was marketed kind of in a weird way. Like hyper cheesy, but it's such a, I keep telling people it's such a weird movie also, you know, like whether it's my friends who are skeptical or people who just missed it in theater, that it's like, mm-hmm. no, there's a lot going on in this movie, without it feeling overloaded, you know, like you said, he does cheesy, like no one else does cheesy. Yeah. So I highly recommend this movie. If you're looking for, if you need a cup of Coca-Cola, I think this is the best cup of Coca-Cola you can get right now.
I love that. Yeah, I think that's great. Well, thank you so much, Texas, for coming on the show again. Always a pleasure talking with you. And we'll have to wait less time before you come back again this time. But I love hearing your thoughts on this film. And yeah, thanks again.
Always a pleasure. We'll see you soon.
It's always such a pleasure to have Texas on the show. Thank you to them for coming on, and thank you to you for listening. Stay tuned. Upcoming shows are to be determined, but there's a good chance they will involve Darren Aronofsky. I'm cooking up an Aronofsky marathon with frequent guest Michael J. Darty. So keep an eye on your podcast app for that in the coming weeks. And with that, thank you so much for listening to Arthouse Garage. We've got a few years worth of episodes. You can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. You can also buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. If you want to support us without spending any money, leave a rating or review in your podcast app, and that is hugely helpful. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter. That's at arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. And that will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening, and until next time, keep it snob free.